Welcome to the first episode of the Frank Online Marketing Show. My name is Temma Frank, and I'll be your guide for this weekly look at how the internet can help your company grow and prosper. Every week, you'll hear from a Canadian company that is succeeding online. Yes, folks, it is possible. And then we'll have a how-to portion where we'll talk about some aspect of internet marketing that will help your business thrive. Now, before we go any further, I've got a little disclaimer here. Have you ever read Seth Godin's book, Linchpin? In it, he talks a lot about the importance of shipping. Get the product out. Then you can refine it over time. With this podcast, I've had to force myself to ship, or else I'll never get it out. So here's the deal. I'm just learning how the software and hardware work, so the sound quality might not be, ideal. I'm afraid that some of the cuts are probably a little rough, and parts that I recorded at different times might not sound identical. I've spent way too many hours trying to figure out how to solve that, and finally decided, you know what? Time to ship. If you have any trouble hearing it in your car or wherever you listen, please, please let me know. As for the more subtle stuff, all I ask is your patience. I hope that you'll find that the content is good enough that it's worth putting up with any little bumps along the way. In today's show, we've got an interview that I did a few months ago with BuildDirect CEO Jeff Booth. Afterwards, we'll talk about some of the lessons that we can learn from his experiences. Our how-to section this week won't focus on the technical stuff just yet. Before you get to that, there are some strategic issues that you really need to think through to make sure your web presence will really help you. So today we discuss one of those key elements. Before we get there, I want to tell you a little story about why I'm even doing this podcast series. I think it dates back to a day way back in January of 1996 when I was stuck at home in downtown Toronto with a toddler, a newborn, no car, a husband out of town, and a desperate need for diapers. Why, oh why, I thought to myself, can't I order the darn diapers online and have them delivered? I shouldn't have to spend an hour bundling up the babies for the snow, dragging them out to the streetcar stop, keeping them under control in the streetcar and then in the store, carefully balancing what I need with what I'm going to be able to schlep home, pleading with the store staff to let my recently toilet-trained son use the staff washroom, and then struggling to get it all home and up the stairs. This is nuts. So ever since then, I've been looking for ways to make it easier for Canadians to shop online. I founded a business back in 2001 called Web Mystery Shoppers to help companies make their websites more user-friendly. It was really cool in a lot of ways. We provided part-time home-based work to some 75,000 people all over the world. And these people gave detailed feedback to our clients on how they could improve their websites. We had great clients. Our first client was the Royal Bank of Canada. Others were the Government of Alberta, ING Direct, and cruise ship centers. I'm not telling you this to boast, but you may have noticed something in that list. Canadian retailers weren't really among them. Canadian retailers have been really reluctant to get into e-commerce. Here we are all these years later. My babies are now grown up, and Canadian retailers are still just barely dipping their toes in the waters of e-commerce. So the goal of this podcast series is to share the experiences of Canadian companies that are succeeding online. I want to make it clear that you can grow your business and make money with the web, and to help teach you how. Each episode will feature an interview with a Canadian company and the how-to segment. I'll also be happy to answer your questions, so please post them at frankonlinemarketing.com or leave a voicemail at my toll-free number, which is 1-866-544-9262, or email me, temma@frankonlinemarketing.com. Temma is spelt T-E-M as in mother A. Also, I'd love to have your suggestions for any companies that you know of that are Canadian and doing something cool online. Maybe even your own company. Don't be bashful. Doesn't work on the internet.
Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks.
Can you tell me a little bit about your business and how it works?
We're an online wholesaler of building materials. We try to simplify the building industry, remove cost, and bring products to market a lot more cost-effective. Buyers save up to 80% on their products.
Were there other wholesalers doing this sort of thing online when you got started?
I would say there was a lot of online chatter. A lot of money went into this business. We've been around since 99. I think the numbers were over $1 billion went into trying to crack the code of online commerce for building supplies because it's such a big category. So you could see there was an opportunity there, but we thought everyone else had it wrong. So we kind of stayed quite small, iterating, until we could really deliver a value proposition to the customers and break out. I would say we stayed under the radar back in the 99, 2000 days. Most people would have said we were insane, that it was all wrapped up already.
So what do you think the others were doing wrong and that you ultimately got right?
I think building products is such a complex business. Most online commerce today works around digital goods or under 150 pounds. And under 150 pounds work is because they can outsource the delivery component to UPS or FedEx.
Mm-hmm.
In building materials, inherently heavy products, fragmented, delivered from all over the world, all the loads are over 150 pounds. So there is no UPS or FedEx for over 150 pounds. We had to actually create that. So most of the online businesses at the time were actually morphed from project management companies. And in the building industry specifically, project management would say, if my drywall comes 2 days late, my painters need to come 2 days late. To drive that into a product strategy and source products, that means you have to have every product of every local distributor in the network. And if you did that, you don't actually remove any cost, you add cost. Why I think they didn't work is there was no lasting value proposition for buyers. They didn't actually do anything that helped a buyer.
So how did you figure out how to make it work? What are you doing that makes it work?
Why did we think we were right? In the beginning, I had a construction company. And what started this business was actually a big problem. I was building a house for a client. The flooring didn't arrive on time. And I chased it. I had to put the people up in a hotel and the furniture in storage. And I was so mad at the process. And I was it started out of a problem. And trying to find the solution to that problem, I was in this business every day. And I thought, this is crazy. If it's this hard for me and nobody can give me an answer, how does the end buyer have a chance? Out of that problem, we set out to develop a solution that would simplify this industry. We knew in simplifying the industry, we could also remove a ton of cost and, in other words, savings for the customers. But it was really about a bigger ideal to simplify and help customers.
I'm still a little unclear on what it is then that you did differently or what it is, how you're doing it differently to make it work.
So the industry has up to 5 layers of distribution. And so my challenge back in that time is every person I talked to who sold the product to the next person in the chain couldn't give me an answer where the product was. So everyone was taking their piece of the of cost on the way through touching that product. And it just ended up with a lot of confusion. Buyers can see this confusion today in the building industry. It's one of the only industries that you have to go try to find an expert that hopefully you can trust. And then almost without exception, you have to double your budget and double the time of completion. That's the problem in the industry that we're trying to remove from the industry. We're trying to simplify this so everybody has the answers. It's transparent, it's clean, it's simple. Mrs. Jones could come to the site, find her answers, and get far better costs than anyone else could.
So then what you've done is you've made it possible to track where the stuff is as it works its way through the system, is that correct?
We've created a new system. So instead of touching 5 people, it doesn't touch it. It goes directly from manufacturer to the customer. That's where the dramatic cost savings.
Was it technology that made it possible then for you to eliminate all those middlemen?
Technology, certainly, because of the internet processing ability to be able to create this logistics system and do on-the-fly calculations to where the product should be shipped from in the works. Why did it work the other way? Because without technology, I would say it didn't work the other way. Why was it allowed to work the other way for so long? Scale. So the large players in this industry had the scale in this industry and would keep the industry the way it is. And most of the manufacturers are very small. People think they're large, so it's a very fragmented industry. Let's say you're a manufacturer and you're in Turkey. How do you find buyers of your product in the U.S. or Canada or any state in the U.S.? You hire an export agent in Turkey to do the delivery to an import agent in the United States. That import agent then sells it to a distributor, maybe a national distributor, who sells it to a regional distributor, who sells it to a retail store, who sells it to a subcontractor, who sells it to the end buyer.
This is why things never work on time. Now I get it.
Exactly. So in our model, the manufacturer in Turkey runs their entire business worldwide through our system. They don't go to trade shows anymore. We hired their last remaining salesperson. All they do is focus on manufacturing the best quality product they can manufacture, and we run the rest of their supply chain. So all of those touches, all of that waste in between and cost to the manufacturer to do what they did before is gone from the system.
That's amazing. So do you have other competitors now that are doing something pretty similar?
It surprises me to say no. People do the easy work. Take the low-hanging fruit. It's easy to create a website, easy to get a whole bunch of local supply on that website because those suppliers need more eyeballs on those products. To do the hard work, to actually change a channel, how few people will really do the hard work. So our goal wasn't make money. It felt egregious to me that this industry worked like this. It was so nagging that I had to fix it. And I say I had to, we had to fix it. And our entire team is driven by removing that pain for buyers.
So how many people do you have on your staff?
80 now.
I saw you're hiring. You're at 80.
Yeah, we'll be hiring within 3 months, we'll have another 30 people.
That's fantastic. What sorts of challenges have you faced in getting it set up and making it work?
Lots, both internal and external. When you have dreams as big as this, long-term dreams as big as this, I would say early on, we underestimated the challenges and the market, and people underestimated our ability to solve them. We underestimated what it would take to change this channel from a logistics delivery standpoint, from having manufacturers sign up and sell the products, us take title to those goods, but sell the products to the delivery component, quality components.
Were the manufacturers concerned that you wouldn't be able to sell as much as they could on their own, or what? Where were the concerns from that end?
I would say early on it was a channel conflict. So all of their sales went through a different channel, and we said we were going to sell against that channel. And so on the web, the same product would be available for less than half the price, a lot less than half the price. You can imagine the backlash that the manufacturers heard from where all their sales were early on.
Yes, there must have been. You're saying most of the manufacturers are actually fairly small, because I'm imagining there must have been quite a backlash from all these middlemen. How did that play out?
That was a learning process for us as well. In some cases, we set up our own private label to reduce that backlash for the manufacturers. So it would be manufactured, created under a brand for us. But in some cases, manufacturers backed out because of that. I would say this, the ones that stayed in, eventually we ended up doing and still do all of their sales. So it just turned over. And funny enough, some of the manufacturers that would have originally been in the ecosystem are now out of business. So the ones that supported the other channel are largely gone.
Well, it's been an inefficient kind of process, and you're helping to make it more efficient. You're ending up essentially selling the products that these manufacturers produce. Who do you sell those to? You sell them to builders, to...
Say, almost a Costco of building materials. And where Costco will sell 24 cans of Coca-Cola. But if you wanted one can of Coca-Cola, you'd go to a corner store who likely bought that Coca-Cola from Costco.
Yes.
We're very, very similar to that model, an online version of that model. So if people meet the minimum order size, we'll sell to anybody who meets the minimum order size. And the minimum order size is set product by product, determined by what's the most efficient amount to deliver from our locations.
So does that mean that you end up largely having to deal with chains of builders who...
No, I would say a lot of DIYers buy our products, lots of DIYers.
Really?
It's actually an interesting way that the business works. DIYers first buy our products because the savings are so compelling. And the volume that they need to buy, if they're doing, if somebody's buying one box of flooring, it's just more efficient to go to a big box and buy that flooring there. But if they're doing a room or two rooms or a floor, then it's just the savings are compelling. That's why I use a Costco example. But then what ends up happening is a lot of times if they don't install it themselves, they hire a subcontractor to install it. And when that subcontractor sees the value in what they paid for it, they're blown away and they start buying it for all their other projects.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, absolutely. Where do you see future growth coming in? What are sort of your plans growing the company now?
Well, now we're almost doubling, and that's in a market that's really poor. So last year we grew about 50%, so 2010 to 2011. This year it's growing fast, so much faster than that, and we expect the next year to grow a lot faster than it is this year. We're in a big category, and we have very limited products in that big category. So it's adding more and more products to help our, what our buyers are looking for, all under the same model. So what do we think? We think it's an Amazon.com size company. We think it's a very big company.
Yeah, it sounds like the potential is absolutely there for that. Do you have venture capital financing, or have you looked at that at all?
We just raised $16 million through OMERS, private equity.
Ooh.
So
congratulations.
So that was last week.
That's very exciting. I mean, I can really see this growing. So when, in terms of your website, you're using it to showcase the products that people can buy and take orders. Is that correct?
That's right.
Do you also use the website as a way to find new manufacturers and get them into the fold?
Finding the manufacturers used to be a very time-consuming process where we would be selling them on why this would work. It's completely inverted, and that's a great question, and that's effectively what's happening. So now the demand from manufacturers to join this ecosystem, this platform, it's almost overwhelming.
Wow.
It's because the manufacturers are selling so much of their goods. The ones that are in this ecosystem are winning despite the market being down. It really is a win-win for the manufacturers and for the buyers. Manufacturers are getting scale, and they get a lot less gross margin, but they have a lot less cost in their business. And that's what the buyers are saving to drive. So those manufacturers just focus on making quality products. Maybe that's why the growth is getting faster and faster despite the market. The system produces better and better results all the time.
Well, and also, I guess the initial fears about whether or not it would work have now been dealt with because they see that you've been in business for a while and it is working.
Right. But just as important is we go after manufacturers that can deliver, that can produce high quality products for the best price consistently.
Right.
But where it really works, and we can see it in all the customer data, that Swedes have evangelists of the brand that buy more and more and refer us business. That part is just exploding. And this feeds back to what you were talking about, why others didn't work and why this is working. When you do great things for your customers, when you do a great thing in the market, people notice. People tell that story. And the internet is largely frictionless. So if you're doing a poor job, that it's internet's frictionless too. People will notice. So why the growth in the business? It's the growth in customers, and it's winning. It's actually solving that pain point that we originally set out to solve. The growth in the numbers is just a reflection of really happy customers.
Clearly, at this point, a lot of that growth then is a word of mouth thing. In the earlier days, what sorts of techniques were you using to reach your customers or potential customers?
Mostly, and it still is today, it would be online channel exclusively. So PPC, organic, banner ads, but that would be largely the marketing.
Are there any particular techniques online or outlets online that if you found more effective than others?
I think we do a really good job in organic. Google and the search engines, they actually truly want to provide great content for their users. And so do we. So we create great content to help our buyers understand the process and the products really granularly. And as a result, Google ranks our site really high.
Okay.
On virtually all the keywords. A lot of people go and try and game that system and go and hire link builders in India and try and game the system, and there's constant game in the Google organic rankings. We've taken a long-term play on this, and just what do our customers need? They need product expertise and great quality content to help them, and when we do that, the byproduct is good search rankings.
I think you're quite right. I mean, I read lots of those articles about, you know, the various SEO tactics and link building and stuff, and people get all upset when Google changes its algorithm, but the reality is Google is trying to get you to the effective results. So
exactly.
If you're providing valuable content, then you should rise.
They need to keep changing their algorithms because of all the people trying to game the system.
Yes, Absolutely. So how many people work on your e-marketing then at this stage?
With merchandising, adding products to the site, our marketing team is 12.
Do you have any suggestions or advice that you would offer to others who are thinking of taking something that didn't used to be really done online and turning it into an online-focused business?
Get ready for a war. It's a broad question. I see the future in the future world that most business is transacted online,
yeah.
But it only happens if the online companies provide value that and a lot more value than a retail store would. So if I was somebody looking at that in any industry today, that would be my first question. Can I provide that much more value to buyers or whoever my constituent was? Can I provide that
yeah.
much more value by doing it online? If it's just another website, I wouldn't do it. And then to provide that much value, to provide that much value in a big industry that's untapped online, it's a lot of work.
So just going back for a minute, in terms of the logistics, so you're saying you basically replace the UPS or FedEx or whatever, so you're doing the actual pickup and delivery and getting it through customs?
Yeah, we do all that. We contract that to freight carriers, but I wouldn't say we replace UPS or FedEx. We developed a system that does what UPS or FedEx does for overweight items, over 150 pounds. So our system contract with different carriers for all of those different modes of travel. But UPS is largely effective, and FedEx largely effective under 150 pounds. Over 150
right.
pounds, they don't carry the goods.
So you are still subcontracting to actually get them delivered, but because you're the one who's dealing with it from the manufacturer's doorstep to you, you're able to track where it is?
And that scale, because we're giving so much volume to our carriers.
Right.
So it doesn't just scale from one manufacturer. Every manufacturer into the ecosystem drives cost out of the freight. It then mm-hmm. gets transferred to every other manufacturer to make their products more competitive in the market.
That's very cool. I'm so excited to have met you and talked to you because I think what you're doing is absolutely wonderful. It's long overdue in that business. I suspect there are a lot of other efficiencies in the home building process still to be had. But that's great.
Thanks, Tama.
Wow, quite a guy, hey? I recently ordered some free hardwood samples from BuildDirect, and they arrived in just a couple of days. I was quite impressed by that. I can barely wait to place my order and get the new floors installed, although first I've got to get my husband to agree on the color choice. And, of course, the whole plan's thrown a little in the air now that I'm podcasting, and I'd like to have a nice sound-absorbent room. Anyway, there are a few lessons that struck me in that interview and that I think might be relevant for you. One was the importance of finding a pain point and setting out to solve that pain. As Jeff said in the interview, a lot of his competitors in the dot-com heyday of the late 1990s took the easy way out, but the easy way didn't really offer any great advantages over what people could already do. It was a lot harder to take the approach that BuildDirect took, which really involved totally rebuilding the whole system from the ground up. But in the long run, it's that kind of approach that leads to success. Second thing that struck me was the importance of thinking through the effect of what you're doing on the entire supply chain, including how your suppliers might be pressured by their suppliers or by your competitors. You may think you're offering something wonderful to them, but if they're getting a lot of heat, they might not go for it. So in BuildDirect's case, for instance, they wanted to get rid of layers of middlemen. Well, duh, no great surprise that the middlemen fought back. And so even manufacturers who saw the benefits to them in what BuildDirect was offering were a bit scared to jump on board. When you're planning, think through how can you prepare yourself for those kinds of reactions. Third was the risk of channel conflict. Now, that's been a biggie for retailers as they've opened online stores, and for a long time that's why Canadian retailers were quite reluctant to go online, and that's probably still the case for some of them. One way around that is to offer online-only products, such as a private label brand, and that is something BuildDirect experimented with, but there is a tricky balance there because people want to be able to see online what they can get in your store. And they'll get annoyed if they can't buy it in either place. So channel conflict is a very real, serious issue. Fourth, the combination of push and pull marketing struck me about my interview with Jeff. Consumers get drawn to the site by the great prices, the information, and the selection. They buy the products, give it to their subcontractors to install, and then the subcontractors get so excited by it that they end up buying from the site too. The result is they've got a whole lot of customers who are evangelists for them, and that's definitely something you want to try to do. And the fifth thing that struck me was how great content will give you fabulous search engine rankings. Give the searchers what they're looking for, and Mr. Google will reward you. Now let's get to the how-to portion of today's show. I want to talk today about how to come up with the right value proposition for your market, because this is pretty important stuff. Whether you're starting a new online business or you're planning to use the web to expand or develop your existing business, you need to figure out the why. Why would people come and buy from you, whether it's online or in your store? Why would they come to your website? Why would they give you their contact information? Why would they buy from you? Why would they tell others about you? These why questions are crucial. Let's go to builddirect.com and see how they've approached the why. You can pause this recording for a moment while you get there. If you can't look at the website right now because you're in a car or something, that's okay. I'll describe what's there, and I will also put some screen captures in the show notes at frankonlinemarketing.com/show, so you can always take a look later. One of the first things that you'll see when you go to their site, high up and centered on the page, are two boxes. One of them says 30-day money-back guarantee with the subheading, we even pay the return shipping. The other one says save 80% on top quality flooring, decking, and more. Now, I'd say if you're looking for flooring, those both provide a pretty compelling reason to explore this site, don't you think so? They give you a very clear benefit, saving 80%, and they minimize your risk, money back guarantee, including return shipping, which would be a pretty big deal if you're talking about returning something as heavy as flooring. If you look a little further down on the page, they give you more reasons to try them out. 5 free samples. Again, they've minimized the risk by pointing out that they are, quote, completely free, and they remove a hurdle by pointing out that you won't even have to give them credit card information. They talk about the new products, with more coming in daily. They tell you what's hot, so you can feel confident that what you buy won't destroy your house's resale value. These are all important issues for somebody who is thinking of buying these products. And they have, right there on the homepage, customer testimonials with real names, where the people are from, and dates, right there on the homepage. In marketing lingo, we call this social proof. That's all fine and dandy for a big player like BuildDirect, I hear you saying, but what about me? Well, first of all, remember, they didn't start out big. Even if you can't guarantee that people save 80% with your company, and most of you probably can't make that guarantee, you probably can get some good customer testimonials, and there's got to be something that you are doing better than others. If not, why are you still in business? I remember talking to a woman a few years ago who owned a sewing machine store. It was after a talk that I'd given to a group of Canadian retailers about online marketing. And she said, I don't want to put my prices online because they won't be as good as what people can get at places like Walmart. I pointed out to her that she had several benefits that Walmart cannot offer. One, she and her staff really know their products. I'm sorry, Walmart may have fantastic greeters, but how much do they really know about the sewing machines they're selling? Now, I've got to confess, I got a D in the sewing part of my grade 8 home ec class. It was my worst mark ever, and the next year I was the first girl in the school ever to take shop instead of home ec. Neither my teacher nor I could cope with the thought of my doing another year of home ec. But now, many, many years later, I'm actually thinking that maybe I should give sewing another try, because my body shape isn't exactly that of a model, and it would be really nice if I could have nice-looking clothes that fit me. So I go online, and I see that sewing machines range in price from under $100 to over $2,000. I don't know what to buy. Now, neither the Walmart store nor their website will really help me with that, but she, my independent sewing machine retailer, she can help me. On her site, she can have a buying guide that explains the differences and helps me find and choose what makes sense for me. Yep, there's no question some people will take advantage of that buying guide and they will choose what they want and then go price shopping. I get that. But an awful lot of us won't. We'll feel a sense of commitment to this company that's giving us great information and advice. So as long as their prices aren't way out of line, we're going to buy there. especially if she can reassure us with things like, for instance, offering free returns if I'm not happy with the product. Now, you might legitimately be worried about the cost of that, although I think it's kind of something you have to do if you want to sell online. But even quite apart from that, they can also add value by doing things like offering a free sewing class in store if I buy from them. It's pretty clear I'm a newbie. I'm going to need those sewing lessons. That not only gets me to buy from them, but it might get me in the store where they can upsell me with more classes, bobbins, thread, whatever other related products they might sell. Speaking of related products, they can sweeten the deal by throwing in some little extras. I mean, I don't know how much a starter kit of thread, scissors, and whatever else might cost, but if they add that as an incentive to buy from them, it could well be enough to just tip the balance and get me to buy from there. They could have an online video course on how to sew. Yep, there are definitely a lot of free demo videos out there on YouTube now. But if this company links straight from their site to a good video series, whether they produced the series or someone else did, that's adding extra value for me because it saves me the time of hunting and figuring out what's good and what isn't. They can also partner with stores that sell fabric or patterns, so everybody benefits. I guess what I'm saying to you here, folks, is get creative. Brainstorm. Think about what might attract a new customer to you, whether in-store or online. Who is that customer? What are they looking for? What do they need? What are they having trouble finding? What will make them happy? Be as specific as possible when you imagine your prospective new customers and design add-ons that'll be right for each type of customer. Those add-ons can take advantage of your expertise and your product knowledge. That provides a lot of value to me as a customer and very little cost to you as a retailer. And frankly, that's why small companies still exist and I believe always will. That's why we still have bookstores despite Amazon. That's why some small electronics stores can compete with Best Buy and Costco. And why there are even still some small independent travel agencies succeeding out there. It takes some creativity, it takes some thought, but it is quite doable. Are you having trouble figuring out the why for your business? Tell me about it below. Let's see if together we can brainstorm some ideas to help you profit online. And if you are profiting online and aren't having problems with these ideas, then why don't you share yours too and help some of your fellow Canadian companies? Please tune in again next week when we'll be hearing from another successful Canadian company that's crushing it online. And you'll learn more about how you can too. In the meantime, if you like this episode, please go give us a positive review in iTunes once we're in there, which hopefully won't be too long. And be sure to subscribe and tell your friends all about this show. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to hear from you soon. Bye.